me. Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome and also appreciation to all the members of the Portfolio Committee for inviting us to do this briefing. I'm Advocate Peter Durant from the Department of Justice. Our Director General. I think this is better. Thank you. Apologies also from the Director General of Justice, who's not well at the moment. I've brought with me a number of role players. It's not all from the department, you will be happy to see, but it's a holistic approach that we're trying to deal with in terms of dealing with sexual offences. So with me, I've got the interim registrar for dealing with the Register of Sexual Offences, Ms. Ntombizodwa Chilawane. We've got, sitting there, then we've got next to me Kamogelo Lukebu Wilderson, the Director of Victim Support and Specialized Services in the Department of Justice. We have on that side Major General Tashis Heldenhuis from South African Police Services, as well as Ms. Margot van Rooyen, also dealing with legal services from their side. And we've also got from this side, from the Department of Social Development, Ms. Malloy, Director of Victim Empowerment, and Ms. Berry, Director of Child Protection Unit. There's apologies from the SOCA unit, from the National Prosecuting Authority. They are at the moment busy with sexual offences in Durban as we speak. So unfortunately they couldn't attend here. But Chair, I'll try to be as brief as possible. We have submitted a presentation to the committee. I'm not going to go into too much detail in terms of the background. We all know that the Criminal Law Amendment Act tried to deal with the protection of victims' rights in terms of sexual offences in a holistic sense. It was implemented incrementally, with most chapters coming into operation in December 2007. Except some chapters which came in operation in 8 and 2009 respectively. The Act has been implemented through guidance of national instructions, directives, regulations as required in the Act, and then obviously services are being provided to victims by the Department of Social Development and other role players, as we will show during the course of the presentation. The objective of the Act, obviously a single statute dealing with all sexual offences and related matter, comprehensive provisions, comprehensive protection, a national register that was introduced, provision of HIV testing for perpetrators, and regulation then in terms of the manner in which sexual offences must be dealt through adoption of a national policy framework on the management of sexual offences and related matters. Now this is something that is still outstanding. And we will deal with some of the reasons as to why that has not yet come to it. And I think, fortunately, the positive news in this regard is we've basically dealt with the framework, and we will be indicating how far we are with that a little bit later, but at least there's been a substantial progress in that regard. And obviously, an implementation plan to deal with the Act. If we look at the progressive implementation of the Act, we've tried to deal with the true outcomes and impact aspects. The first off was we tried to look at how do we deal with this in terms of an integration implementation plan. And in that regard, we established an operational intersectoral committee on the implementation of the Act, and this is led by the Department of Justice. This is an operational committee that is consisting of chief directors and other senior officials of various departments. But in addition to that, and I'll come to it just now, there's also a director general committee that has been established to coordinate the functions of it. The outcome is to deal with coordination in terms of the various implementation matters, and it gives us a forum in which to discuss challenges, progress, and all related matters relating to the implementation of this Act. The coordination is extremely important in terms of this because we found in the past that there was fragmented activities, and we're trying to pull that together at the moment. When we look at the aspect pertaining to instructions and directives, in this regard, there is an interdepartmental consultation process dealing with this. national instructions and directives have been put in place in the various departments. South African Police Services, as well as the Department of Health, have developed and published and disseminated their national instructions, and I think General Geldenhuys can give further detail in that just now, if required. The reason for these guidelines is to make sure that the personnel in the various departments deal with these aspects in a uniform way, so that we don't have fragmented approaches according to the various provinces, etc., but that they deal with these things and there's clear direction to the various officials that deal with these matters. In terms of the prosecuting authority, they've produced national directives, and this has been distributed to all the prosecutors for use. And the Department of Justice has published regulations in terms of a national register for sexual offenders. Once again, these processes and guidelines are helpful to the personnel dealing with these matters, giving them direction in terms of how to implement the provisions in terms of a specific act. I've mentioned just now that we had an operational committee that deals with from an official level, but we've also established an intersectoral committee on the management of sexual offences on a director general or heads of department level. This is led by the Department of Justice. They started to meet this year for the first time. 17 February was the first meeting, and the next one is taking place in the next week in terms of dealing with a high-level consideration of matters. At the moment, one of the aspects that will be dealt with by the next meeting of the Director Generals will be the consideration of a draft national policy framework so that it can be submitted together with a report to Parliament through the Minister of Justice. And I think that is what Parliament has been waiting for and your committee has been waiting for. So the good news is that this has been developed and it is now just awaiting the discussion by the DGs. And that will take place, as I've indicated, hopefully next week or the week thereafter. Monitoring and assessment of the progress is dealt with by this DG committee. And in terms of this, there is also regular feedback in terms from the Operational Intersectoral Committee that is dealt with from the director level. In terms of this, it looks at compliance in terms of the Sexual Offences Act, as well as what has been dealt with by the various departments in terms of the required activities. If we look at the other act obligation that was placed on the department, and that deals with the national policy framework. As we've indicated, the policy framework was developed, it was presented to the cluster. The cluster discussed it, and further interdepartmental consultations took place, and the DGIC meeting will now put its final stamp on it and deal with it. One of the aspects relating to this is that each department in the cluster needs to do a comprehensive report. It's not just one report from the department giving various aspects from justice. We actually need each department to give its input into a comprehensive report that also has to be tabled to this committee and the parliament. And so we're looking at that as well and making sure that that is taking place. Most departments have already submitted their input and we're just looking at consolidation in terms of that and some clarification. Part of this also looks at looking at the impact assessment in terms of the various aspects and making sure that we deal with compliance in terms of the Act. When we look at the provision of services from the Department of Justice's side, we've dealt with a number of things. On the one hand, we've looked at aspects pertaining to HIV/AIDS and the testing thereof, and in this regard we've made funds available to look at various aspects pertaining to secure applications, lock-up facilities in that regard, making sure that there's pro formas, etc. But we also made sure that in terms of normal services, in terms of the sexual offences courts, that we roll out and continue to roll out activities such as the placement of audio-visual equipment in the various courts and making sure that in all the various main sexual offences courts throughout the country and the regional court centres throughout the country, we do have equipment that can be utilized to ensure that there's not secondary traumatization of victims. In terms of the court intermediaries and court preparation officers, in this regard, we've appointed a whole range of intermediaries as well as court preparation officers. They are dealt with from the prosecuting authority side, specifically the court preparation officers, and they help to deal with ensuring that the victims are familiarized with the court environment, that they know what to expect when they are going to deal with a court case, etc. We also deal with, in terms of the intermediate services, with mentally disabled persons, as well as with children, to ensure that they ensure complete access to the court proceedings and understanding the language in which the matters are dealt with through the services of an intermediary. Sorry, if I can just go back there. From the prosecuting authority side, we've continued to roll out the Tutuzela care centres. We have, at this point in time, aimed to deal with 25 for 2010-11 financial year, and I think we're very well on track to deal with that. To establish such a centre is not just a simple thing of just going to a place and establishing it. Most of these centres are dealt with through donor funding, so it's a whole process of negotiating with the Department of Health, the other role players, NGOs, to make sure that there is proper services rendered at that. So it takes a bit of time to deal with Tutuzela Care Centre establishment. It's not just an overnight thing. But in this regard, I think the ones that we have established are starting to work very well in engaging various role players to ensure that there is proper service to the victims. Department of Health have designated 164 medical centres, and from the Department of Social Development, we've seen that they've established one-stop centres to help deal with this. On the presentation, you'll see there's 8 one-stop centres. 4 is actually already in establishment, has been established, and 4 is in the process of being finalised. But in this regard, I think this financial year, we'll see that we have about 8 in place. In terms of this, it gives us the progressive realisation of continued victim support and empowerment, and it will lead to improved quality of evidence in a safe and friendly environment. I think when we look at things like these centres, I think for the first time we really have a holistic approach in terms of how to deal with these things. It's not just one single department, it's various departments that are working together, especially in the one-stop centres. The one challenge that we have in this regard is obviously budgetary constraints in terms of how fast we roll out and to where we take them. If we look at the sexual offences, I've already indicated that we are continuing dealing with the rollout in terms of the dedicated sexual offences courts equipment to help ensure that these victims can deal with the evidence in a safe and friendly environment. At this point in time, I think we've got about 20% of our courts have these equipment. The sexual offences courts all have it, but the cases that are being dealt with, that deals with these, are not only limited to the dedicated courts. They are dealt with throughout the country in the normal regional courts as well, in various areas. So we're trying to roll out these type of equipments to the other normal regional courts as well, to ensure that at least in every main centre there is a regional court that can deal with this, even if it is not a dedicated sexual offences court as such. In terms of information systems, we are busy at this point in time with phase one of a national register in dealing with the capturing of the details of sexual offenders. We are now looking at dealing with phase two. At the moment, much of the current information is still being dealt with in terms of manual information coming through, but we well are our way to making sure that that is also dealt with and captured on a proper way. In terms of integrated case management systems, we also capturing case information now from all the various ports on a monthly basis to see how many cases there are and what's happening to those cases. This case management system that has been developed and implemented in the department is giving us assistance in dealing with the case flow management to a large extent. It also helps the presiding officers in planning their roles in an improved fashion. Monitoring of the progress of the finalization cases can now be dealt with. And I think in this regard, we're seeing that just looking at the trends, etc., we reported to this committee, for example, last week that in terms of sexual offences, the dedicated courts have an increased conviction rate. And those are the sort of things that we can now pick up through systems like this. We found that continuously over the past few years, we've had a continuous improvement in terms of the conviction rate of the sexual offences. And I think that is as a result of the improved coordination between the various role-playing departments, from police, prosecutors, to the other role players. I think we're still not where we want to be, because I think at this point in time the average conviction rate is about 69%. But that, I think, is something that we want to push up once more. We're not just looking specifically at a conviction rate, but trying to really make sure that there is a fair justice in terms of these cases. The problem that we have is that a substantial number of these cases deal with young victims, and those are obviously more difficult cases to deal with. We also know that these type of cases always happen in circumstances where there's not always other witnesses, etc., that are available to deal with it. So obviously that is one of the factors that impacts on the conviction rate. We're trying to deal with the backlog of cases as well as the sexual offences cases through the backlog project, which we gave information through to this committee last week as well. In terms of this, sexual offences cases and cases against children are one of the priority areas of our backlog project. So when we deal with cases in general, these are the type of cases that we put first and foremost on the court rolls. When we look at training, then in that regard, training manuals have been finalized and has been piloted in certain instances. We found that in terms of the various role players, that we've had training for prosecutors, we've had training for magistrates. For example, the slide indicates that between 2008 and 2010, we've already trained 402 magistrates in terms of the implementation of this act and the various aspects. And I think the training manuals in general is of great help to the people to deal with these things. The training manuals goes hand in hand with the guidelines and other policy directives that are being given through from the various departments. The role players around the table chair, from police to social development, can perhaps give more information on what the details are in terms of their training aspects, if required. If we look at the Department of Justice, we've also dealt with training for civil society organizations. We've trained social development people, we've trained prosecutors, clerks, a whole range of individuals that can only help improve how we deal with these type of cases at the local level. This assists with the skill development of these persons and improving their capacity to deal with these matters. If we look at awareness raising, this is, I think, one of the aspects where we've really tried to boost activities in the last period of reporting. In this regard, I think specifically from the prosecuting authority side, they've had every year since 2007 a in Darbar that brings all the various role players, NGOs and other sorts of role players to the table to deal with facilitation of engagement in terms of this act and how to deal with these sort of cases, specifically aimed at children's activities, etc., and making sure that this is receiving attention. From the department side, we've looked at promoting the awareness of these type of offences and making sure that it's reported and that the courts can deal with it and making sure that they render evidence in court through radio shows and other awareness activities. I think in this regard, we are seeing that more and more people are becoming aware of their rights and of what can be done to assist them in this regard. I think specifically if we look at the activities relating to the one-stop centres, the shelters from the Department of Social Development, etc. Those are all activities that help that we only not just tell the people that they can come forward and deal with these things, but they are actually shelters and other mechanisms in place to help protect those witnesses and take it forward. In terms of a national register, I've indicated that that is in place. We've appointed a registrar to help manage the offender. Phase 1 has captured the convictions from June 2009 to date. At the moment we're dealing with Phase 2. There's some challenges dealing with the capturing of historic death data as well as the vetting of applications for certificates. And in this regard, we have updated the infrastructure in terms of IT for the various systems in order to help deal with this in an improved fashion. Until that is in place, obviously we need to deal with the information on a manual basis, and that is being dealt with. This register gives us, at this point in time, the possibility to at least help deal with the information that we receive from the various courts in terms of cases in this regard. But at the moment we do have a challenge in the sense that obviously because the historic data and things are not yet in place, we cannot properly deal with it. So this is something that is work in progress, and we hope that this will be dealt with in an expedited fashion. In terms of a way forward, Chair, obviously I think the main activities that we are dealing with at this point in time is the tabling in Parliament in terms of a framework, as well as a progress report as required in terms of the Act, as well as in terms of the legislation that requires that the training courses, etc., I think also has to be tabled. So those are the things that will now be fast-tracked and is receiving the attention of the DG committee, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks that will be finalised. The minister will be in a position to table it then in Parliament. I think from our side, I think we need to express real regret in terms of the fact that the policy framework took so long to deal with. From the department side, we had a change in terms of the chief directors that dealt with it. The one that was mainly responsible for this resigned, and we had to deal with it afresh. But there's also a range of other activities that prevented the framework from being finalised. But we've got a new DG in the department, and she's very much on the ball in terms of taking and finalising this. We've also seen that from the other JCPS cluster DGs, etc., this is one of the priority areas that have been identified. The register, we hope that phase 2 will be finalised within the next 18 months, and hopefully this will obviously help assist in really making sure that the Act's provisions in this regard is dealt with properly and that it gives us the information that is required. Chair, I think in that regard, I think this is a brief synopsis of what we have dealt with thus far, and it gives an overview of the various roles from the various departments. But I've got around the table various role players that can help assist in answering any questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. I can see you are talking, you, in terms of policy framework, you point out the various levels it should still undergo, and also admit that it is late, but you are not giving us a sense of the time frames. That is, when do you expect this process to be finalized so that it's presented before Parliament? I would want you just to comment on that before I allow other people to make decisions here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As we've indicated from our side, we finalised the policy framework. It's just the Directors General that have to meet with it, and they will deal with that within the next 2 weeks. Once they have approved it, it's going directly to the Minister of Justice, who will then table it. So we hope that this process will be finalised within a month's time. We're trying to fast-track this as much as possible. But it's just a question of making sure that the various DGs place their stamp on it, and then we can finalise it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to ask similar questions, and we appreciate this is quite a complex issue, but it is a huge concern that I think we're facing a third deadline now, is that right, for the National Policy Framework? And that's subject to the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill granting a further extension, which is in our hands. Obviously, it's undesirable that it is, that the whole implementation of the Act surrounds that, firstly the drafting of that and then the adoption. But besides that, there are a number of other obligations in the Act, and you've touched on some of them. And I don't think the members here actually appreciate, I think there are almost like 16 or 18 obligations ranging from training, directives and instructions, progress reports and establishment of committees. Some of them have been complied with, others partially, others not at all. And we would need somehow to engage specifically. For example, the NPA has got certain obligations and directives in conducting prosecutions, in handling HIV tests that have not been complied with at all, as far as we are aware. And we would like more information on that. My difficulty is, do we now go through every single item and say, well, why hasn't this issue been complied with? Why hasn't that been complied with? And I would need guidance from the chair, the degree, and what are the implications of non-compliance. For example, on the National Policy Framework, the fact that it hasn't been drafted and adopted, what is the implications relating to the implementation of the Act? How does that impact? Let's just get that as a general question, and then maybe we can engage specifically on certain obligations that have not been complied with. Can I then also ask, there was a Constitutional Court decision relating, and I found it quite strange, was it, did I understand it correctly, it was the DPP versus the Minister of Justice, relating to the, where the Constitutional Court expressed concern about the few facilities available for intermediaries. If you would just comment on that, has that situation been improved as another specific question? And then I understand that the Registrar of Offenders, as of September, is that register improving in its implementation? As of September, we understand that it wasn't very well functional. Obviously, we spent a lot of time with this legislation, and we appreciate most of these obligations should have been complied with by, was it 2008? We appreciate complexity of intersectoral cooperation, but I'm sure you'll agree we've been very patient. And we as a committee need to start looking very deeply and what are the implications of non-compliance. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, apologies for coming late. I was in another meeting. One maybe in-house issue is over the receipt of the documentation. I'm not sure when everybody else got it. But I effectively only got mine this morning because I wasn't in the office yesterday, which is, I think, what most of us are not meant to be. It's meant to be a constituency day. And it's this thing of, I'm not sure where the fault lies, whether it's with the officials, whether it's with the secretary, but we can't properly participate in these meetings. I mean, there's a lot of documentation.
unless we have it in advance, so we can read it and prepare. You know, so I think we need to start getting onto a position that if we don't get documents, like in this case, it should have been given out by Friday, before people started leaving. Then we're it doesn't matter how many people have come down, how much has been spent on airfares, we're not prepared to meet, we're not prepared to engage. So I think we need to start moving, that would be my view towards that position. But having said that, look, I've sort of skim read, I mean there is an interesting document from the Chuaranang Legal Advocacy Center which evaluates. Unfortunately, there are two documents. There's one which is 23 pages, which I got I got this morning, and then one that I got found coming here, which is a bit shorter. I'm not sure which is which, but they've been very useful in terms of taking the 16 commitments that Mr. Swart talks about and evaluating whether they were done or not done. Mr. Swart raised the question as to what should we do. I think the most useful thing, particularly in terms of the lack of preparation, would be to say to the officials, take this Chuaranang document and give us your response on it. Because it's long. I mean, whether one looks at the 23-page version or the 16-page version. You know, where you haven't achieved, why haven't you achieved? So that would be my suggestion, to take this document and to, I think it's a very useful document, and to say to the officials, please respond. And then there's also, we were given, I think it came, the Mail and Guardian article on the provision of HIV testing and PEP services. I'm not sure if you addressed that in your input. I may have missed it. I don't know why, you know, for the officials here, I don't know how long you've been in government, I mean working for the public service, but why is it that the Department of Justice particularly finds it so difficult to meet deadlines? That's something I'm interested in. Why is it you allow us to, we ask for inputs when we set dates in legislation, why do you allow us to put in dates if you know that you as the implementing body are not going to be able to meet them? But that's also something that just can't keep carrying on. It's embarrassing.
thanks, Jay. So just bear with me. I've written things on the pages. The Tutuzela Care Centres, the last time we had a discussion on this, the Department of Social Development, and I know you're not the Department of Social Development, but they said that the hugest problem facing them was the fact that there weren't enough social workers. Now, we've just heard from you about the problems with funding, etc., but I would see that a huge problem is the fact that we don't have social workers for these centres. So could you just brief us as to where we are with regards to actually having social workers in these Tutuzela centres? then also the 164 dedicated medical centres. Has training in these medical centres taken place? Because I can't remember what newspaper it was, but again on the weekend, a young lady was raped and went into one of these centres and said she felt like she'd gone through the rape all over again when having, you know, the evidence taken, you know, from her. And then in line with that, what are we dealing, you know, in terms of time span with the forensic evidence that is gathered from these bodies? From these bodies, sorry, it's more victims, it's not only bodies. But, you know, from what we understand, you know, the forensic testing is taking months and months and months, thus delaying these court cases, and eventually people aren't going to court anymore because it's taking so long. And then something that worried me greatly, I actually asked a question to the Department of Justice recently, because we were told that there were 60 courts that were fully functioning with regards to being able to hear sexual offences courts. The answer that came back to me was, in actual fact, there's only 42 operational courts. So why, and this was an answer directly from the department, so could we find out why initially there were 60 courts but now there's only 42 courts operating? because from what I understand, the necessary budgetary restraints were taken care of and the money has been made available. And then also just regarding the SAPs, if the training there has been fully completed, because I think the last time we spoke the training was busy ongoing. So we'd just like to know if the training in that regards is done. And Chair, I did mention this once before, I did an oversight tour in Gauteng of courts, and from what I could see, the only court in the greater Gauteng area that had a fully functioning sexual offences court with all the necessary requirements was the Magistrates Court in Pretoria. So that worried me. Well, other courts, they did have sexual offences courts, they didn't have the necessary one-way mirrors and anatomical dolls for the children, for example, and that kind of thing. So just if we can sort of see where we are in that regard.
Okay, then we'll start with the department, and you can be assisted by others, fill in their various questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think one of the most difficult things to answer, why has there been these delays? I took over in terms of dealing with these matters the last 3 months, and I must say, in that period of time, I've not been able to really completely understand why we've not met the deadlines of the past. But I can promise you one thing, and that is that it has been fast track at the moment, and that within a month's time we will have most of these been settled and dealt with. I think from the one aspect in terms of the fact that although there's not been a framework that has been properly adopted, there's not been a progress report that has been tabled, and the other commitments in terms of the Act that has been indicated, for example, the guidelines have to be placed at Parliament, etc. In actual fact, at ground level, most of these activities have continued, and there has been an improved coordination between the role players. So I must ask that the colleagues that are with me perhaps try and assist and help answer why we've not been able to deal with that, because they have some more background information in that regard. But I must say that in terms of that, in terms of things like, for example, the directives from police, etc., those have been issued, and they are guiding the police officials, and I'd like just some input from the police in terms of that when I finalised the answers from my side. In terms of the Constitutional Court case, with regard to the facility aspects, I'll ask my colleague here to respond to that. In terms of the register, yes, it is improving, but I will ask specifically the registrar to help deal with that aspect. In terms of the receipt of documentation, I really welcome the approach from JJ in terms of the Paranam document. I've not seen it, but I think it's a very helpful way to deal with it, because from our side, we've nearly finalized the report to Parliament, and this can help shape that document and make sure that we make it as comprehensive as possible, and where there are gaps in terms of some of the other departments that have been touched on in terms of that document, we can make sure that we deal with that. So when in a month's time this process is finalised, the report comes to Parliament, we have that covered as well and have a comprehensive document. So thank you for that. In terms of the why it's so difficult to meet the deadlines, I must be honest that I think we are all human, but it is something that is simply, we cannot allow it to happen and continue. And I think from the department side, we are really trying to put pressure on the officials, saying that really we cannot deal with this anymore this way. So we're starting to look at, do we discipline people, how do we deal with it, etc. And I think this is part of our approach also. When the monitoring from your committee starts to kick in and deal with these things, we really are taking it to heart. And I think this is, I think, and our second quarter report will help show that we've improved in trying to meet these deadlines. If we look at the Department of Social Development in terms of the social workers, fortunately we have representatives here, and I'll ask them to respond to that in terms of how they're increasing their capability and capacity in that regard. The medical aspects, I'll ask my colleague here from the department to help deal with that, saying that we didn't have somebody from health here. In terms of forensic services, I can indicate that what we have dealt with in this regard is to fast-track all aspects pertaining to sexual offences. We've instituted a procedure where the prosecutors, specifically the chief public prosecutor and control prosecutors, can specifically indicate there's a priority matter. It's been outstanding for a while, and that matter then gets highlighted and fast-tracked and dealt with. So in terms of that, there has been an improvement in terms of the turnaround time, and I think we are positive that that is starting to show. In terms of the decrease in dedicated force, I think we need to look at it in two ways. What has happened is that previously, under the previous ministers and things, some ministers wanted dedicated courts to just deal with these things. Then we had other ministers that felt that if we only have these matters dealt with in dedicated courts in certain areas, in the other courts in that province where we don't have these dedicated services, we are actually having a secondary type of service. We're having two different types of a justice system that deals with the victims of these crimes. If one goes to court X, it gets a complete dedicated service, but just in the neighboring area where there's not a dedicated court, it gets a different normal type of service. So the idea has been that those things that work well in dedicated courts, the things like the equipment, like training, like those sort of things, try and roll that out to all the regional court areas. Make sure that those magistrates are sensitized, trained, etc., and that when they deal with these matters, we have those best practices in place. So the idea is that, in actual fact, over a period of time, all our courts should be dedicated in that sense, in that they deal with these matters in an improved fashion. And I think that's why we've seen that sort of decline. That's the one reason. The other reason is that case flow management is dealt with from the judicial side. The presiding officers deal with the case flow management and how they appoint magistrates to deal with which matters, etc. That is out of our hands. One of the reasons why we have a decline in terms of these sexual offences courts is that the regional court presidents and magistrates are not too keen to just deal with these cases alone. You can think if you deal with these cases day after day, hour after hour, it's not just trauma on the victims, but it's on the court personnel, it's on the magistrates as well. So you need to make sure that those magistrates also deal with other matters, but they don't just become stigmatized just dealing with that alone. So we're trying to rotate it, etc. And the idea is that these people should, in actual fact, be more generalist in specific in terms than they deal with all matters, and they've got good grounding in terms of all matters and training in terms of all matters that just be specifically dedicated to a dedicated sexual offences court. So they've been saying that instead of just making sure that we have one dedicated court there, let's try and make sure that all the regional courts that are dealing with these matters can deal with it in a proper way. So their idea is that specifically in terms of these type of offences, let's deal with them more in terms of all the other courts and making sure that they deal with get dealt with in a proper way. So like giving them training in terms of the magistrates, in terms of how to deal with these sort of matters in a proper way. But I think from our side, until we have this scourge under control, and it's going to be very difficult, we still feel that in certain areas where there's a predominance and prevalence of this matters, let's try and deal with it through dedication. So from our side, we are looking at how we can try and deal with that. We are having discussions at the moment with the National Director of Public Prosecution and with the Regional Court Presidents Forums in order to see how do we move forward in terms of this dedication of courts and making sure that we deal with these things in a proper way. So budgetary aspects is not the main consideration. It's all the other aspects as well that deal with these things. In terms of the SAPs, I think General Caldenace will deal with that. And then in terms of the Gauteng courts, I think what we try to do is to ensure that, that all the courts that deal with these things do have, not necessarily one-way mirrors, but audio-visual equipment, all the other things like the tarmac dolls, etc. We're busy with an audit looking at where in the country are there more needs in terms of this, and that will be part of a report that we will be giving to Parliament to say where do we have these systems in place and where are we giving attention to it. But if I could perhaps start with the police side, General Geldenhuys, if you can perhaps just touch on the police aspects and then you can come down the road in terms of the other elements. Thank you, Chair.
Go on, General.
Okay. That's fine, Chair. That's it. It's fine, Chair. From the police's side, I think there's a number of issues that, that were raised that we need to address. The first one deals with the training specifically and how far we have progressed as far as the training is concerned. And I think when we talk about training, we must distinguish between two classes of police officials. The first one is the official, an ordinary police official, who gets knowledge of the commission of the crime, to whom it is reported, or who is called out to the scene of the crime. Now, that specific member has certain specific duties to perform, and he needs specific guidance on how to perform that. But it is the kind of information that not only relates to sexual offences, it relates to other offences as well, to conserve and to protect evidence, the crime scene, until your expert detective arrives at the scene and can then take over and take control of the situation. Now, so when you talk about that first responder, the training of that first responder, that should be part of the basic training of every police official that is appointed in the South African police force. We realize that, and therefore we first of all focused on making sure that our basic training will be in order. And that has been completed, and every single person who is recruited in the South African police service receives intensive training in this field, together with the rest of his basic training and dealing with crime scenes, etc. So that part is completed, and as we carry on, this will continue. In other words, in future, all persons will receive the same training.
Yes,
I
see there's a hand there.
Yeah. It's just with the Farallon documents.
No, no, what is the president?
Okay.
Is it now general?
Sure.
General Geldenhuys is saying is you know, there are some specific things on training that he's not responding to. So for example, Chwarenang say terms of the act, and they quote the section, the National Commissioner must develop training courses for officials on the implementation of the Act and gazette a report on the training to be tabled in Parliament within 6 months of the implementation of the Act. Farunang say you haven't done that. Do you agree with them that you haven't done it? If not, why? But please don't come with sort of broad, vague things that miss the key points.
I think, Honourable, you are going against your advice, basically. Because what should happen? I just thought they were just going to add on the basis of what they have, but you are going to conclude following your very good advice about this Swaranan document. Well, they are now going to study this Swaranan document and then come back to us with very direct responses on the details. I haven't seen it myself, but I was just thinking that it might be useful if we you have got problems with the generalization. That's what they're prepared for now.
Yeah, Jim, my difficulty is why I didn't take my own advice was that here we have General Geldenhuys sitting telling us about all the training is being done and it's general training, etc. But the Act says there must be specific training.
Does he know that? If he doesn't know that, then I think we've got a bit of a problem that the police don't know the act and haven't looked at it. So I'm sorry for going against my own suggestion, but I just think that there wasn't much point listening to General Geldenaes going on about general training when there was a specific section in the Act which they haven't met, and I think they need to respond to that. Do they know about this section of the Act? I mean, for ease of reference, it's Chapter 7, Part 4, Section 66, Part 1B of the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act. If you are aware with it, then how can you come and tell us it's all going fine with training? One would have at least expected you to have said, look, sorry, we faced certain challenges, whatever they are. But instead we get this general thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for the protection. The fact of the matter is that when we talk about specialized training as referred to in terms of the Act itself, it is multifaceted training. You cannot say I develop one training course that fits everybody. So what we are doing is we are saying we identify the different groups and we have developed specific training material, completed it, implemented it in the police service, and that specific training deals with the issues mentioned in the Act itself, the national instructions.
Why haven't you conducted it?
Does it need to be presented?
Because, Chair, honestly, all I'm left with is I don't know whether General Geldenaes is aware. You know, I would have thought if he was aware that he would have then come and said, okay, although the Act says there must be specific training courses, we've decided to approach it this way. But he doesn't come with that. He only comes with that once he's confronted with the facts of what's in the Act. And I think that's quite wise. It would appear as though, I don't know how much knowledge there is of this from the police's side.
Yes.
Chairperson, I stand to be corrected, and that's fine. If there is a specific clause requiring us to publish the training in the Gazette, I'm unaware of it, and I will check on it.
Gazette, the report.
The report on the training?
Yes.
Okay. I'm unaware of that one.
Okay.
According to the Chuanang document, page 3, they say SAPS training. The National Commission of SAPS must develop training courses for the officials on the implementation of this Act and gazette a report on the training to be tabled in Parliament within 6 months of the implementation of this Act. And then there's a footnote which refers to the section that I referred to. So, I mean, maybe, Chair, maybe we should go back to, I'm going just on their document, but I think if, and maybe they're wrong, I mean, in terms of what they're saying is you had to do this report within 6 months of the implementation of the Act. Let's have a look at it, come back to us, but I think if it does appear as if the police have not read the Act, then I think you're going to have to come and explain why.
Can I just assist? General, you were busy explaining when you started. You were explaining, you said there are two elements. And I think you were still busy with the first element, which was the basic training. Then you were going to go on to the second. And maybe we can hear that part. You've got the Act in front of you. So clearly you have read it. If there are issues that we need, but maybe you can just explain. You and JJ correctly interrupted you to raise a point. But maybe you can explain what you were going to explain about the more specific training in terms of the Act as you understand it.
I think nothing that general, but having the Act in front of him does not necessarily mean he's heard it. That's an assumption. But I'm not suggesting either that he hasn't read it.
Yeah.
So let's proceed to now. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, that was my first part was with the first responder, in other words, the training that every single police official must receive. That's included in our basic training program, and that is also, if I move on to the second part, there is in-service training for existing police officers who have already undergone basic training, and that training courses are continuously presented. And I have the figures here, and if Chair, you want me to, I can quote some of the figures of the number of members that have already been trained and completed the training. It is well in excess of 5,000 members. Remember, these training courses had to be developed and it had to be approved and accredited as training for the police service. But then, Chairperson, there is a second part to the training, and that is the specialized detectives. Now, you will remember that in the police service we had the family violence, child protection and sexual offences specialized units. Those were abolished some years ago for the simple reason that it was felt that these people are not located at station level and therefore they are not au fait with the circumstances in the station area, and that expertise should be brought to police station level. Now, eventually, as a result of that policy, the FCS units were disbanded, but I can inform the committee chairperson that there has recently been a decision to reinstitute them, and since July of 2010, we again have family violence, child protection and sexual offences units in operation in the South African Police Service. Now, the training of people specifically to perform functions related to the family violence, child protection and sexual offences units have been ongoing, because remember I said although they were disbanded, the functions were delegated to station level, so they were expected to perform that. So that training went on and continued and is still today continuing. In fact, as we are sitting here, there is a training exercise going on in Pretoria where new people for the new units are now once again receiving specialized training. So that is the process that we are following. As far as the training in SAPS is concerned. Then, Chairperson, lastly, every police official who joins the detectives undergoes a specific training program as a detective, not as a specialized detective, but as a general detective. And those people also receive training on specific aspects of the law, and sexual offenses is one of them. So that is part of their, shall we say, basic detective training. And that training program is already completed, and it is already implemented, and people are receiving, and we have actually trained all the trainers that will be presenting this program. So that is what we have done as far as training is concerned.
Chairperson, I just want to say that I'm quite satisfied with the explanation by the General about training. The fact that they may not have advertised in the Gazette is maybe overlooked, which they will attend to, but I'm quite satisfied with his explanation about training.
Chair, thanks. Look, I'm not satisfied. I mean, when we pass a law, that law must be kept to. And I'd want to refer the General to Section 66 of the Act, subclause 5, which reads, and then also to Mr. my colleague, Mr. van der Merwe, Honourable, and Ms. Michaels.
Michael.
Okay, the training courses contemplated in this section must be tabled in Parliament within 6 months after the commencement of this Act. That's A. B, the Cabinet Ministers responsible for safety and security, admin of justice and health must within a year of the commencement of this Act and every 12 months thereafter table a report in Parliament relating to the implementation of the training courses. C, any new or amended training courses developed under this section must be tabled in Parliament within 14 days of the finalisation thereof. Now, my problem, and where I disagree quite sharply with Mr. van der Merwe, is if we put something into law, then the officials must implement that law. Okay, it's not for you to say, no, we don't like this, or actually we haven't bothered to read it. You must implement it. If you want it amended, then you apply through your minister to have an amendment made to the Act. So it's not acceptable that you haven't implemented it, and it's quite concerning that it doesn't appear as though you're aware of this sub 5 as far as it relates to the police. And presumably the sub 5 was put in, 66 sub 5 was put in because there was suspicion around the content of the training, that Parliament didn't want police officials to come and generally tell us about training, but wanted to have the opportunity to see what were the courses that were being conducted. So, Chair, I'm concerned then on that, and I think that clearly it hasn't been done. I think it's a very poor reflection. But I think that it then needs to be implemented urgently. We need to see those training courses, and we need to have these reports.
Well, Attorney General, do you want to belabor the point?
I don't think so. I think you have heard what the Honourable is saying, and maybe let's, and I don't think we want to really engage in the debate on this. So let's move on. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to be glad of this point, but I think we acknowledge what has been said, and I think I've indicated right from the beginning that when we do a report in government lunchtime, we will make sure that we look at each of the various obligations and make sure that we have a status quo report in terms of what has been done in that regard. If it hasn't been implemented, how will it be dealt with to make sure that we can comply?
Yeah, just one point I want to make. Do you want to invite? Do we still have other people making?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
The next one is the registrar. Some
thank you, Chair. On the part of the National Register of Sexual Offences, we are aware that is provided for in terms of Section 42, Subsection 1 of the Criminal Law Amendment Act. We are aware that it had a time frame with it. We said we need to implement in a particular period. We need to meet that deadline. However, I need to submit to the House that we have met, you know, the deadline as far as the implementation of phase one is concerned, which is, you know, receiving the current application dating back to when we implemented on the 30th of June 2009 to date. However, the challenge that we experience with the implementation of phase two, which includes the capturing or the receipt of historical data, the vetting process, as well as the issuing of clearance certificate. That one, we are unable to meet due to the budgetary constraints that we experienced as departments. Part of that, which emanated from SAPS, because they are the key department that contains or that holds the whole criminal records of offenders. They needed, initially they needed an amount of 200 million for them to be able to update or assist the National Register with the AFIS as well as the updating their crime record. However, seeing that we weren't able to source those funds to be able to implement, there is a 30 million that has been made available as part of the IJS fund to help the CRC as well as the AFIS to carry on with the update. Currently what we are doing, we are approaching our minister with regard to the extension on the basis of Section 42 to be able to implement, to be able to get an extension to implement the Section 42 because it bared a time frame with it. But currently what I need to report is that SAPS busy updating their AFIS, is busy updating their CRC so that they can be able to assist the National Register with the information. And as the Act has provided that we need to get the information, or the information need to be provided for electronically. As we don't have the electronic interface between departments, we have resolved to receive that information on a manual phase. So the manual phase is taking place We have met with the department, and we are having bilaterals with the departments. That is the Department of Health, the Department of Correctional Services, as well as SAPS, to finalize how we're going to receive that information, considering, you know, considering the confidentiality that is carried in those records. And one other challenge that we need to allude to is that the CRC and AFIS, although they contained the criminal information that is contained in their database does not contain the information of victims, be it a child or a mentally disabled person, because that is the objective upon which the act or the register has been formulated thereabout. Therefore, to try and cap that particular challenge, we have decided that we do a pilot through the application of expungement, seeing whether or not we can be able to source that information based, you know, from the court records that we have within the Department of Justice, comparing them with the information that is contained in the CRC, as well as the historic information from the Department of Correctional Services, as well as the information from the Department of Health for those people who are declared state patients. In saying that, I need to say that we acknowledge that and it is work in progress. And in terms of training is ongoing. We have trained more than 440 court clerks. We're still going to train again the court clerks, as well as the area court managers and the magistrates, as well as the prosecutors. So that's basically that is happening with regard to the implementation of the NRSO. Thank you, Chair.
Can we just ask a quick follow-up?
Okay, fine. Let's just add to that.
The one element that I think is worrying us in terms of not getting it electronically is just the risk management aspect. And I think that's why we are trying to make sure that through pilots and things like that, we test that data that we are getting manually. But this is a process that we are engaging the cluster with in terms of how can we expedite the finalization of electronic systems. But budgetary aspects is, I think, a problem, a challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The further extension that you're asking for now, what is that extension? For how long, firstly? And secondly, just give us an idea of what is happening at the moment practically. Are you able to, is it working? Can people access the information? Are you issuing clearance certificates? And is there is a second register in terms of the Children's Act. Are you aware of that other register? Now, how are you linking with that information? Is there any, because it was always strange that there were two registers to us. How are you cooperating with, or what is the impact of that second register? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, with regard to the interface between the registers, they are in the Ops ISC for the NRSO. When we receive the information from SAPS, that information is taken through the two registers, which is the CPR as well as the NRSO. But their register, as you can remember, it has an extended mandate as opposed to the NRSO. But however, whatever thing that we're doing on the ground, they are also involved. And to answer the second question, currently, like I explained when I started, we have implemented phase one, which is the receipt of current information. Current information is the one that dates back to the 30th of June 2009 to date. And the historic information will be the one before 2009 June, you know, dating whenever it's humanly possible. And that process, the phase two process, is the one that includes the vetting process, is the one that includes the issuing of clearance certificate. Since the register does not contain the historic information in it, it becomes impossible for one to issue a clearance certificate or to do or to conduct a vetting process, because you don't have the information against which you can vet a person and issue a clearance certificate. However, through the pilots that we are actually trying to come up with, like Advocate Durant has explained, this is part of the pilot that we're doing, that we do the clearance for now because we don't have the electronic interface, neither do we have the historic information on the register. We have agreed with SAPS to do the clearance through their sub-database. But the challenge that we have is that even though we can do the clearance through an SAP 69, we don't. That information doesn't contain the information of a victim. So we still have to go down to the dockets or to the court records that we had at that to establish who the victim was under the circumstances.
And the time period for the extension?
And the time period for the extension will be 18 months because the different processes that are being performed on the system, be it on the AFIS or on the CRC, it depends. Right now, SAPS, with the implementation of receiving the files, I mean the cases from justice as and when we're doing the orders, as it is not filed in a specific manner, they said they need up until April 2011. And with the other process, wherein they need to provide the register with information, they started in July, which is going to finalize next year in July. So the periods or the time frames are depending on the processes. But we can say it's between 18 to 24 months that would have finalized the implementation of phase two.
There's two issues. I mean, when the bill was passed, there was quite a debate around should there be two registers. And maybe it's something you might want to look at in your, not now, in your more thought-out report to Parliament. Do you want to recommend that we look at streamlining? I mean, given the resources problem and so on. I know those two registers do different things. I don't know if it is possible to combine them. But you may want to look, well, not you may, can you look at that and then make recommendations to Parliament about whether you think there should be any amendments on that aspect, which may then be of assistance if it's too cumbersome. The other aspect was just on budget, whether there's any dedicated budget. Can anyone say this amount of money is spent by national government on implementing the Sexual Offences Act, and how is that increased, decreased? I don't know if those figures are available, because we've had one input then of insufficient funds for properly implementing the register. Are there other budgetary issues? Again, I don't know if you can answer that now. If you can't, can that be in your report in a month's time?
It could be in the general report.
I want us to move on.
Ms. Michael asked a specific question around the facilities that are made available to the courts. As Advocate Durant has indicated, we've got dedicated courtrooms as opposed to specialized sexual offences that we're focusing on now. We are incrementally providing the various regions, provinces, with funds on an annual basis to ensure that they have these physical resources. From the beginning of the Act, funds have been allocated, and I can say these are allocated on an incremental basis based on the 7% margin annually. However, one of the things that I think I find exciting is the fact that already there are certain provinces that are saying that they do not need the infrastructure because they have infrastructure in the dedicated courtrooms that they have identified. And specifically, it was the Northwest and the Western Cape have indicated, and we have allocated budgets to the tune of 300,000 this year. I know we allocated about the same amount in the previous financial year, which I can really vouch for. One of the issues that we have to battle with is ensuring that these facilities are maintained. And we are dealing with the matter of maintenance of the facilities as part of normal court facility management, because before they were falling back into the sexual offences budget. But now we have negotiated with facilities to say that that must be part of normal facility management. we have also, in response to the question around the Paswani case, yes, indeed, we didn't have a regimen to really deal with the intermediaries, because we had intermediaries that were hired by Department of Justice, intermediaries hired by social development, and NGOs providing some intermediary services. So part of the delays in the NPF, I think I'll shoot the two questions with this one answer, is that there's quite a lot of discussions that we had between departments about services that were offered on a fragmented basis. So we had to agree as to where the service of intermediaries is located, and we had agreed. We have agreed in principle that it will be the Department of Justice. We have given provided funds to the regions to provide intermediary services on an incremental basis. We had meant to have, we have a plan to at least have about 105 intermediaries by the end of the year. However, one of the challenges that we have is that in areas where we have allocated funds and there's an increased need for intermediaries, the same budget that we give is given to ad hoc intermediaries. So it doesn't translate back into warm bodies that are on the ground, but that is one of the challenges that we're dealing with. So I can say, safely say, on an incremental basis and based on the caseload of particular courts, intermediaries will be appointed. In addition to just allocating the funds, we have seen it fit that we develop a regime that manages the intermediary services, because as this management was fragmented, there was no one guideline that really guided the regions on how to manage the service. And that discussion document is being discussed with the regions, including the existing social development intermediaries, to make sure that wherever any intermediary is provided by any service provider, they have at least basic guidelines as to how to manage the intermediary service. And yes. The key question that was asked is we are not able to meet deadlines. I think we should acknowledge that, as Advocate Durant has indicated, that this is unacceptable because this is our legislation. I think sometimes we overshoot ourselves in our zealousness to get legislation to address issues around victim support. But because we are earnestly looking at intersectoral implementation of the Act, all the national instructions, directives and regulations that were developed, they were developed intersectorally. We had to make sure that whatever, when the national instructions are developed by SAPS and the directives are developed by NPA, we can compare how they are interlinking and ensure that there are no disagreements between the documents that we are drawing, as well as the Department of Health. So in a sense, I think these discussions, for me, I think it's a learning experience. We've realized that we assumed that it's easy to agree, but to get role players to agree on critical matters that relate to it, it's not easy. It is difficult, but at the end of the day, I think we were able to achieve our first basic obligations of making sure that at least there are guidelines in terms of the national instructions, in terms of regulations, in terms of directives. There was a partial question around the directives of the National Prosecution Authority. They have not been published, although they have been distributed to the prosecutors. The major reason for non-publication is the Paswani case. The Paswani case will have a bearing ultimately on the national directives of the prosecution authority in terms of determining issues around intermediary services. And we hope at the end of the day, once the Pasani case is finalized, the national prosecution will be in a position to publish their directives. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
I'm responding to the specific question that was asked about social workers in Tutuzela centers. I think I need to allude to the fact that when I presented or we gave an account on the human trafficking programs and progress report in April, I have acknowledged that there are shortage of social workers. And the department has developed a strategy for recruitment and retention of social workers. And we do also have a dedicated budget to recruit social workers in the form of our awarding scholarships to students at first year level and also those who have completed their matric. But unfortunately, we have not yet met that state, quota that we are looking for. Hence, we are still having a shortage of social workers. But we have agreed, I am also part of the IDMT, which is the Interdepartmental Committee, which is led by SOCA unit, where we discuss the issues of Tutuzela centers in terms of linking the services at Tutuzela and our Department of Social Development. We have agreed because we have realized that we have shortage of social workers, which we cannot at the moment address adequately. But we have agreed that we look at the resources available where we can also refer our victims that are being seen at the Tutuzela centers to receive also social work intervention at either our regional offices or to the national, our NGOs in the vicinity of the Tutuzela center, so that they also get the psychosocial support and be able also to go through the healing process of the trauma that they experienced during the sexual offense incident. So at the moment, I can say we still have a shortage of social workers. We are addressing that as a department, and we are engaging also our academic institutions to see how we can improve or increase the number of social workers that are graduating on each year so that we can be able to meet the shortage that we have in the field. Thank you.
Advocate.
Thank you,
Jay. I just want to indicate that in terms of the Tutuzela care centres, I think for quarter one, we dealt with approximately 3,861 matters, and most of those were assisted by social workers from the Department of Social Welfare. So I think there is an improvement in how we're dealing with this. It's a slow process, and there's not still enough people, but there is an improvement. Jay, thank you.
To a slightly different issue, and that relates to the. It's not working. I'll just turn those off there. That relates to the issue of trafficking, which is obviously in terms of the transitional provisions. Now, we had a briefing by the department on trafficking in the World Cup, and no cases were reported, but that clearly was only the designated courts. Last week with the MPA, there was an indication that there was a slight vagueness about trafficking cases because of the lack of specific offences, which was a bit of a concern to us, and maybe you can come back to us on that, because here is a specific offence of trafficking created in terms of these transitional provisions. Now, we're going to be having public hearings next week on the issue of trafficking, and I'd really appreciate it if we could get some information as to how many cases have been brought under the specific transitional provisions pending the passing of the next legislation. It would appear none, which would be strange from the time. Do I understand correctly that the transitional provisions kicked in 2008 already? So there was a specific offence of trafficking created. If we could, you might not be able to answer us immediately, but if you do have any information, it would be useful. I presume the NPA is also going to be making an input next week when we have public submissions. But do you have any comments at this stage on that issue? Thank you.
Chair, very shortly, no, we don't have that information. It's something that we are following up from last week's engagement as well. We hope to have that input to you for next week's hearings.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it seems like we've covered the field. mention of soccer part reminds me of, no, 1994 there was a political party called Soccer Party, led by one James Mange. Just to refresh your memories.
Sorry, Chair, can I just add to that? Also, in terms of the Children's Act, there's also provisions relating to trafficking, so on both those issues. Thank you.
I just want to make two comments in closing. But I think in your presentation, Advocate, you observed that the change of ministers tends to change policy. I think it would help if we had consistency of policy. Because we can't blow hot and cold, because that amounts to substantial injustice. If one minister comes in, he decides to abolish the courts, we put money, it's actually wasted as well. So it might be helpful that we have consistency on that. And just to summarize, we are concluding by saying that there are observations that the committee has made, which will be also substantiated and augmented by this Saranang document. And we would then invite your good selves to go back and actually work out a detailed response guided by what we have discussed today. And in our next meeting then, it would be useful even before you come that we get the documents well in advance, that we can study them, and yeah.
Chair, there was also, the researchers had a very useful report with a few questions that we might also submit to them to look at.
Yeah, sure, most definitely.
Well,
let's do that. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
It's not interfering with your summary, Chairperson. I just wanted to say there's a direction of, in terms of structure of information. I think there's a beginning to march somewhere where we can begin to make sense mutually when we talk to one another. The road is long. There's a lot of gaps if one were to speak to it, but I thought one was to emphasize on the clear intention to improve.
Chair, thank you. From our side as well, we take to heart what has been indicated. We will try and give us as quickly as possible so that we have advanced notice. And I think from our side, we'll try and engage with all the relevant relevance to ensure that we interrogate those research documents from Baswani as well as the research documents.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. This part of the meeting is closed. I'm asking committee members to stay a bit. Just one matter I want us to clear. Bon voyage. Have a good journey back to Pretoria. I miss Pretoria very much.
Yeah, you know, that's like Sure.